40 years. Yeah. I'm still reeling from that family school message. I feel like elaborating a little bit. You know why entropy or apparent entropy happens? We could go on all day of why that happens. Number one, it's not entropy. How many of you firstborns and secondborns have said to your parents, "We would have never got away with what the little ones get away with. Because bless God, we are going to obey the Bible every single time there's an offense. And they just ain't what they used to be." Well, maybe it's entropy and maybe it's more scriptural. Maybe a parent realizes, you know what, it's not the end of the world. I know someone in this church that helped. I know it's hard to believe that someone from one of my grandchildren could be bad. But my son-in-law, Greg, he went to a good family in this church, good parents, and said, "Man, we're doing business." And man, in about a half an hour conversation, they helped my son-in-law. So just be careful what you're perceiving as entropy. Here's another reason. You're listening to me now, aren't you? Time goes by so fast, and I'm talking about myself now, that you assume what your older ones were taught and knew is by some means of osmosis is going to come into the younger ones. I mean, we have a rule. I say we have it. I've looked at my wife one day and say, "Listen, nakedness, my rule is no one sees your nakedness except your parents, and at a certain age, not even your father, the doctor, and the person you marry. That's it." So they just know that if someone ever says, "Hey, I want to see your nakedness," well, this is ringing a bell. Friendship versus family. I'm going to give you both ends of the spectrum. You should, young people, teenager, 20-year-old, your parents should be your best friends. Now, you know what? If you're a parent, I think you ought to honor your parents' scripture. I think you ought to obey. But friends are not mandated. How many of you first generation? No. How many of you first generation Christians, as we would call them here? Kate, that would be you. Tina, that would be you. Your parents are saved. I don't even want to raise a hand, but your parents are not necessarily your best friends. Your mother is not your best friend. Your father is not your best friend. So to say this is the standard, your parents should be your best friends. You're addicted to your friends. You are pressured by your friends. You are peer dependent on your friends. That's the other end of the spectrum. And that's why some parents go so far to prevent this. See? So you got to have a little bit of wisdom and a little bit of sense and a little bit of discernment as a parent to try to decipher that and read that. So it's not like it used to be. No, maybe it shouldn't be like it. But maybe it shouldn't be like it's getting either. Boys and girls. For you that didn't start out with us, the original plan was that you could have, I hate to say this in the same, boy and girl friends. Amy and Jason were friends. Jessica and Ben were friends plus, and they could meet and know each other. Why? So they wouldn't have to go out and be alone and do it the way the world does it to, quote, get to know each other. Friends. Flirting. The human heart is easily swayed and often betrayed at the hand of emotion. Feelings that should never have been awakened within, tearing the heart in two. Listen, I beg of you. Now, I know the guy that's saying that is not our stripe, but guard your heart. Guard your heart. Man, guarding that heart was important. You only want to give that heart to one person. Now, the downside of so overemphasizing that is we've seen in the past grown women that are marrying age that a male comes to talk to them. Oh, I can't believe this man is talking to me. Really? It's no wonder nobody wants to talk to you. Mom and Dad, you did it, and it worked out, and you don't know the baggage that comes along with it. You say, preacher, why are you preaching this? Because your older brothers and sisters had to hear it week in and week out, and we're just trying to bring you along. So, young people, are you in? We used to say this. We have a standard in our home of this engagement and courtship, whatever you want to call it this week. You can't say I love you until you're engaged. You say, why? Because the chances are less of you not getting married when you're engaged. And I just think it's a nice thing to be able to say, for Jenna to be able to say, and Claire to be able to say, and Anna to be able to say, and I'll never be able to say, you know what? I've never said I love you to anyone but my husband or wife. I don't think it's good to touch before you get married. Why? Just in case. Oh, is that in the Bible? It's good for a man not to touch a woman. We could argue all day, but if you don't emphasize something, they're going to be sitting on each other's laps before you know it. You like that, don't you? Some of you hate it. Welcome to my world. Okay, let's go on. Life goes so fast. Man, we never told our young one this. We never told her. You listen, and I expect you young men to lead the way in this. Girls are easily swayed and persuaded, and I got a lot of them in my house. Okay, Camilleri round trip tour for you famous facts and figures people. 3,195 miles, 160 gallons of gas, 5 different lodging places, 11 restaurant meals and 30 or 40 or 50 home meals, 4 times for ice cream, a Bible conference. I preached 4 times in 2 churches. Thank you for those that prayed. You say, how did it go? I got through. I'm standing here. I don't know. The girls sang 4 times in 2 different churches. Some time at the coast. Some time in the pool. Some of them spent some time at Disney. Sorry. Go-karts. Some of them dropped from one of the highest somethings on the planet. Jacob made Anna do it. And some of you wives are worried about your husband wants a clean house when he comes home. There was an engagement. You want the logistical details? Okay. I knew it was coming. You hear that, Terry? I knew it was coming. But the plan was we were going to go to this quaint little place. It's called Celebration. It's quiet. There's like a water there, and the lights are reflecting off these magnificent hotels, and there's little rocking chairs down by the water, and we're driving home the night before. Deborah and Tim are with Grandma and Grandpa at Disney, and we're driving home, and every night at Disney they have fireworks at 8 o'clock and again at 9 o'clock, and I saw the fireworks going off, and I said to my wife, I bet he gets engaged tonight. We're supposed to get engaged the next night. No, 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 she said. It's not conducive. There's so many people in your mind. Fireworks are always conducive to engagement. It's not often I could say being married to that woman all these years, but I was right. And he quick runs and he gets the ring and he calls her aside under a gazebo. And he said, what could make this night better? And she said something that was off limits. Don't be offended, but not that she was going to do it, but she said a kiss. And he said, I love you. Now that's off limits until engagement, so she's got a tip. And with the fireworks blaring, on a knee, he asked and she said yes. So that was the engagement. I took in Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, and Ezekiel, so I'm ready to preach like a prophet. I walked 70 miles, we ate like kings, laughed, rested, reflected myself to death, and made it home to tell about it. And look at this weather. It's like March. It's wonderful. Okay. Joshua chapter 6. They're getting ready to go into Jericho. And what you're going to hear from the world today, if you do any public evangelism or open up your mouth for God, they know the Bible now. Not like it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago. I mean, they with this internet and the social media and the connection. Am I on, fellas? Am I okay? Okay. They know that we serve this jealous, envious, demented God, in their opinion. Look what he's going to do in Jericho. Go in there and slaughter everybody. I'm just going to read, while you're there, I'm going to read something from Leviticus. For all these abominations have the men of the land done, which were before you. Now, you know what Leviticus is all about. You can't uncover your mother's nakedness. You can't uncover your aunt's nakedness. You can't uncover your son's nakedness, your daughter's nakedness, sodomy, lying with beasts, passing your children through the fire. That's what those nations were doing. Unfortunately, the children of Israel, after they went in, they ended up doing worse than that. So when I read from Deuteronomy, when thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard or a necromancer. Well, what's so big about that? You know, it's the horoscope. Because that stuff leads to the other stuff. For all these that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before you. All right, Jericho was discovered in the early 1900s. Again, and they did an excavation in 1950, again in 1997. So once again, science catches up with the Bible. And in Joshua chapter 6 and verse 1, the Bible says, now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. All right, so what did they see? They saw a walled city built on a 70-foot high hill, the walls between 12 and 17 feet high and at least 5 feet thick. Shut up. No, I didn't say that to you. I'm talking about that's what the city was. Shut, and it was up. Big gates, undoubtedly defensive towers, a fortress shut up. Are there areas in your life where you'd like to get some victory and all you can see is a fortress shut up from a disadvantaged position? an impossibility, humanly speaking. Something good you desire to do or have, but all you see is a shut up city. Perhaps something bad that you desire to stop or not have. Yet all you continually to see on your road to this victory that you want is a shut up city. No matter what angle, no matter what view, no matter how close you get, no matter how far back you get, all you can see is this city shut up. What does God see? Verse 2. And the Lord said unto Joshua, see? Well, we just talked about what he saw. I have given into thine hand Jericho. See that? No. And the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. God said, this guy sees a shut up city, and God sees him already in the city. And it's not the first time, and it's not the last time God would ever talk in the present tense, in the past tense, like something's already happened, and it hasn't. Joshua, keep your hand there, Joshua 8. Lord said unto Joshua, fear not, neither be thou dismayed. Take all the people of war with thee and arise, go unto Ai. For I have, past tense, given unto thine hand the king of Ai and his people and his city and his land. That's not what he saw. Judges chapter 1. Excuse me. Judges chapter 1, verse 2. And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. Judges chapter 7. Judges chapter 7, verse 9. Came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down to the host, for I have delivered into thine hand. Let's look at Jeremiah. I like this one. A little more personal. What a book this Jeremiah is. Jeremiah chapter 1. Jeremiah looks in the mirror, guys. Young men, here's what he sees. Verse 6. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a child. He wasn't exaggerating. He looks in the mirror and he sees someone unequipped, ill-favored, just, I'm a child. I'm too small for that big job. It's a fact. That's what I see in the mirror. Look what God said. Verse 7, say not I'm a child. Now watch this, verse 10. Here's this little scrawny guy looking in the mirror, right? Verse 10, see, I have this day set thee over the nations and over kingdoms. Really? That's not what I see. To root out, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, and to build and to plant. That's not what he saw, but that's what God saw. 1 Samuel 16, I want to show you a verse. You're very familiar with it, so familiar. The liberal theologians just destroy this verse. The trouble is when you get a verse in your mind for what it you think it says, you ruin the Holy Spirit's opportunity to show you something else. And it doesn't mean that every verse has 25 doctrines connected to it, but let me just pick out some words and make an application. 1 Samuel 16 in verse 7. You know the Lord seeth not as man seeth. 16:7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature. Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. Now, I know you know the rest of the verse. But can I just pull that out and state a fact? The Lord seeth not as man seeth. He does not see, should I say, we do not see what He sees. He doesn't see like us. Here's the point. Your physical eyeballs will hinder victory. Your iris and your pupil and your cornea and your suspensory ligament and your retina will blur God's view for your life. And our goal as believers in navigating this Christian life comes down to one thing, and you got to be careful. Preacher, you got to be very careful when he says that, but I'll challenge you and myself to put it to the test in any area you want. Getting God's view. Your ministry, your relationship, your parenting, your government, your world, your church. What is God's view? Because it's not the same as what I'm seeing. I didn't say getting your way. Well, is navigating this life, the goal is to get our way. No. I didn't say to accomplish your goals. I didn't say to meet your expectations or conjure up some extra biblical something that you think God told you to do. I either don't have enough faith to operate like that, or I have too much sense to operate like that. God told me. What is God's view? My goal in navigation of this Christian life is to get God's view. Here it is. He's got a further view. Go to Isaiah 46. Isaiah 46. Keep your hand there. Isaiah 46. Isaiah 46, verse 9. Remember the former things of old? For I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me. Amen. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done. I can see further. All right? Romans 4. That's what we want to get. That's what will bring victory. I didn't say what you wanted or what would meet your expectations. I said that's what would get victory, getting God's view. Romans 14. I'm sorry, 4. And verse 17. As it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations, before him whom he believed, even God, who quickeneth the dead, makes them alive, and calleth those things which be not as though they were. The city, the 17-foot walled city on a 70-foot hill is standing there, is shut up, as sure as I'm standing here, and he's calling it as though it were inhabited by me. But it's not. How can you call these things that haven't happened yet as though they are? Because in God's view, they are ours. Let me explain. I know I've done this before. If we can put history on a timeline. Boop, this is my now. But God sees the whole timeline. He got his Clarence Larkin chart, even though it wasn't made till 1890, and he's looking at this thing here, and he sees the whole thing. I'm looking at a city walled up, and he said, "I've given you the city." Why? Because he sees further. Yeah, I've given you the city. I know you're still back there, but I've given you the city. Abraham, I've made you a father of many nations. What does Abraham see in the mirror? The same thing you see when he says, "I want to make you a preacher. Or you a missionary. Or you a giver." He sees what isn't. Now, Abraham has a choice. God is behind the chart. I can act on what I see, or I can act on what God's view is, what He's told me. A father of many nations. I can believe what I see, which is death and old and unable, or I can believe the evidence of things not seen. Or in plainer words, what God sees and that He's told me. Now listen. God sees such and such for you in your life. And He makes a promise. He said, "I have this for you. But you got to believe it. You got to act on it. And if you don't, does God keep that promise?" No. Now, that makes God sound like He's not sovereign. No. He's just going to apply the verses that apply to a life lived without faith. Abraham has a choice. God has a plan. Now, I don't understand it all. He believes God at the time, but then his eyes messed him up. Now, it says he considered not his body now being dead, but Hagar came in the picture. And so many times our own plans come in the picture. What we see comes in the picture. And obviously, this must be the will of God. And God, and you theologians can straighten me out, but not now, didn't speak to him for about 13 years. Well, he believed and he acted on what he saw. And that's why you got ISIS today. That's why you got a mess all over this world today. He sees a 90-year-old wife and a 100-year-old man, and your body's dead, and it's impossible. And after 13 years, God said, "You ready to talk again? I said, you are going to have a son from your loins." And he believed God. This time he acted on it. I don't think Isaac was virgin born. I'll just say that much. You can take that to the common conclusion. Joshua chapter 6. We're going somewhere, so hang with me. Verse 3, "Ye shall compass the city. All ye men of war, and go around about the city once. Thou shalt do 6 days. God's, I'm not being irreverent using this word. Can I just use it gently? Like crazy. Crazy with faith. Like, he gives them what's going to happen. And then he said, and this is how you're going to get there. And the this how you're going to get there is like as unbelievable as the fact that I am going to get there. but you getting no credit. Verse 4, and the seven priests shall bear before the ark seven trumpets of ram's horns, and the seventh day he shall compass the city seven times, and the priests shall blow with trumpets, and it shall come to pass, if that wasn't enough, that when ye make a long, God's love details, when you make a long blast with the ram's horns, and when ye shall hear the sound of the trumpet, and the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up every man straight before him. That's what is the view from me. This is the plan, and now he has a choice. And look at verse 6, how lovely that is. And Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests. That means he acted on it. You say, would God have flattened the walls if he didn't act on it? Absolutely not. You say, how do you know? Because they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. God said the same promises before that he said this time, but the only last time a whole bunch of people didn't believe, and God said, okay, you don't want to go, I won't go. Everyone in Hebrews 11 acted. What did Noah see? I know what he didn't see. Rain. No rain in Noah's day, kid. The things were watered from the ground like a mist. And yet, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, he moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of the house by which he condemned the world through faith. He didn't act on what he saw. What he saw was an impossibility. But he believed what God said he saw in his view. What about Moses? What did he see? He saw a river, a big old river with no way out. But you know what he did? Through God's view, listen what he said, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. We're between a river and an army. So Joshua called the priests. He acted on it. And he wouldn't have if Joshua didn't move. And when he called the priests, God said, oh boy, God is looking to and fro in the whole earth. He's looking for men and women and boys and girls who will trust him, not see with the physical eyes, but look and get his view. And he wants to work strong on their behalf. You mean by dropping walls, physical, 5 foot thick, 17 high walls, maybe the things in your life bigger than that. You say, preacher, that's nothing. I could have knocked that place down eventually with a pickaxe and a shovel, but I'm still battling my thing. Acts 15. Bear with me just a minute. I'm looking for this night the Lord stood by me and said, fear not, Paul, ye shall appear. Be of good cheer. Paul is stoned. It can't be that. Jerusalem. Our company. Where's that voyage? Is what? 1527. That's what I have. 1527. Okay. Go ahead. 20. Say it again, Reese. Chapter 27? Thank you. Yeah, I knew what it was. Just wrote it down. Listen, it's a storm. The sun hadn't shone for days. They don't know if it's day or night. They're in a bad way. They're pitching their provision off the ship. They're putting undergirding underneath that ship so it does not break apart. Verse 20, where some of you are at right now, when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and says, "Sir, ye should have hearkened unto me, I told you. And have not have loosed from Crete to gain this harm and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer." Good cheer. Don't you hate people that are of good cheer in storms? Don't you know what we're going through? Be of good cheer. For there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve. We know who he is. Saying, "Fear not, Paul. I'm going to give you my view, Paul. Not what you see, Paul. Thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee." Paul sees a storm. Paul sees hopelessness. Paul sees trouble. Paul sees darkness. He certainly doesn't see victory. But he gets God's view, and he acts on that view. You say, what was the great step of faith he did? He cheered up. He cheered up. He was happy in a storm. Don't you see the reality of what we're going through? No. I'm trying to see God's view. Well, preacher, I know what you're thinking. That's what's good about preaching. You think about what the people are going to think and what you think. In every case that you put there, there was something specific for someone specific that in most cases the audible voice of God said, "This is what I'm going to do." And if I could get that, listen, you have Moses and the prophets. You won't believe no one. Don't tell me what you would do. But here's the caution. For me to start naming and claiming that I got a promise of God. God's going to do this. And God's going to do that. Preacher, we don't have that kind of specific promises. So I really want to approach with caution anything extra biblical. But I have something even better in our New Testament. We just can't see it. Philippians chapter 1. But it's God's view. You're going to like this. I hope you like it as much as I did. Another verse that familiarity will spoil it for you. Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Answer God a question. Do you believe that verse? Now listen, I didn't ask you if you're practicing or not. I said, do you believe that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ? Don't be afraid. Yeah. Especially it's so general. I didn't say, do you believe you're going to get healed? That's why you don't get healed, because you don't believe. That stuff's hogwash. Dead men don't believe nothing, and they got raised. Do you believe that he which hath begun a good work in you, hint, if he indwelled you at salvation, which He does, He's begun a good work. He changed your whole being. Give you a dead body and a live spirit. New birth, born again, alive in His eyes. So He started. And what He started, He's going to finish. Now, do you believe that? Or do you believe what your eyeballs are telling you looking at the walled city in your life? What's going to happen to the church? I don't know. Sometimes with the eyes, it's discouraging. But I know this. He which hath begun a good work in me will perform it till the day of Jesus Christ. That might be without the church that you pastor. I'm talking about that church. You know the view of God that's most important in my life is that view right there. That what He started, He's going to finish with me. Who am I going to marry? Who shouldn't I have married? I don't know. But I do know that what God starts, He finishes. And He'll finish it if you marry or not. Now, you may not want to hear that, but He'll finish. Well, don't we have a part when we mess up? Listen, I've listened to so much Bible the last... David messed up. He messed up bad. I was talking to a brother yesterday. How could God possibly use me for anything? I said, listen, don't ever lose that sensitive, heartfelt, repentant attitude towards sin. But I'm listening to Ezekiel chapter 37, which is hundreds of years after David committed adultery and killed a man. And you know what? On this earth, his life was never the same. Family got all messed up. There were certain things that we do, that our actions, we cannot get back. But in Ezekiel 37, Bill, it says, "And David shall be their prince." Really? David has something going on in the kingdom? God must be merciful. Elijah calls down fire from heaven. And then he gets the pity party attitude and said, "I'm the only one left. We're the only ones in the church doing it right anymore. We're the only church doing it right anymore. We're the only couple doing it right anymore. We're the only believers doing it right anymore." And God said, "You're out and you're in." That poor guy. I mean, it's not like he committed adultery. He just got a little down in the mouth and, man, I'm just kind of feeling lonely here. "You're out. Elisha will be in your room." You know who shows up on the Mount of Transfiguration? Elijah. Maybe all our mess-ups, God still has a plan in the kingdom. I don't know. I hope so. "But my son, but my daughter, but my spouse, but my marriage, but my church, but my pastor, but my people, but my nation. God, what I'm seeing is not looking good. He which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ." That promise is God's view and not limited by anything. Who wants something else to worry about? Okay, I'll help you. Oh, you pastors are sensational. We're going to go to jail and we're going to suffer. And with all job opportunities set to open this year for women in the all-volunteer armed forces, including battlefield combat specialties, The prospect for requiring women 18 through 25 years old to register for the draft is destined to become a reality should the Department of Defense persuade Congress to change the Military Selective Service Act. Secretary of the Army John McHugh remarked in October that if the goal, quote, is true and pure equality, then you have to look at all aspects, including a requirement for women to register for the draft like men of the same age have done for decades. 2 months later, the White House echoed McHugh's prediction that the women draft issue will have to be considered. Isn't that encouraging? You know, it makes me scared. Philistine schools and Philistine armies and Philistine governments having dominion, not only over us, but over our females, let alone daughters. Can you imagine? Here's one little problem I have with American females going in the army that haven't, like, volunteered. And I know we could take issue with that, but let's face it, she should probably do better in the army than she would in a beauty shop, right? Can you imagine the average Facebook selfie, gum-chewing, 18-year-old American girl fighting to defend what we have? You might as well shoot yourself before it starts if that's your partner. Now, although I believe our women, our young girls here probably make better soldiers than half the effeminate men that society has produced, I don't believe that's a biblical role for women. Yeah, we could sit here and say that's right, but what are you going to do about it? I always said if they made my kids go to public school, I'd go to the Philippines. What are you going to do? Because, Jerry, I don't think, or Bill, I don't think, if they say she's going in the army and you say no, she to be ruled by sodomites and filthy language and dressing like men and being signing over said, I am the property of this and she is not. You're not the one going to jail. She's going to go. Gulp. You know what I do know? That he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ in a jail cell or on a battlefield or whatever the case may be. That's God's view that we can rest in today. And today I'm going to act on it. Was Philippians 1:6 fulfilled in Paul's life as he sat in a jail cell? Yeah, I'm reading about it. He being dead yet speaketh. How did his life end? If the theologians and historians are correct, not good in our view. Death doesn't limit God. Nothing limits God. What about Peter? What about all those disciples? What about John? Was that good success? Yes. If it's the work that God began and finished. See, we're thinking, okay, I'm called to pastor a church, and I'm called to be a missionary, and I'm called to start churches, and I'm called to be a godly mother at home, and I'm called this, and that isn't working out, so it's... Listen. You know who went in this city and helped take in that battle? A guy by the name of Achan. Yeah, but Achan. You know what God did? He began a good work in Joshua and he finished it. What about Achan? God used Achan too. Do you know that there... You talk about the ultimate in faith. Do you know that in every house there are vessels, some to honor and some to dishonor? You say, preacher, I messed up so bad, there's no physical recovery in this world. He which hath begun a good work in you may not restore you to what you think that means, completing the work to be restored to, but he will use it and perform the work in you until the day of Jesus Christ. I messed up. Okay. Put feet to that, Pastor. Okay. I messed up so bad in an area I can't recover. How's God going to finish the work he started in you? Don't do it like me. You better watch me, young man. You better watch me. I messed up. I lost it all. Watch me. Learn from me. Joe Camilleri's course on how to raise a God-fearing, Jesus-loving son. Don't do what I did. God, you say, yeah. I was overboard in this area and underboard in this area. And I took too many risks in this area. And I went against what I thought to be right in this situation. And yada, yada. Well, they got to make their own choices. I know that side of it. But he will use our mess ups. How do you know that? Because he begun a good work and you're going to perform it until the day of Jesus Christ, whether you're a vessel of honor or dishonor. American standard. Everyone has a couple in their home, right? A toilet is a vessel. It's not real honorable. But it sure does have a use. Moses, Joshua, I see. I've delivered. Now, here's the plan. Moses, see. See what? My view, I have delivered. Abraham, I've made you a father of many nations. That's not what I see. Now, here's the plan. Here's your invitation. God, I believe Philippians 1:6. Forget about your, don't forget about it, but for this instance, your marriage, your ministry, your mess ups, your sin, your church, your bad decisions, everything. But I have enough faith to believe that come hell or high water, good or bad, right or wrong, you are going to perform what you started in me. I have enough faith to believe that. Now, what's the plan? Show me the plan of where I'm at right now, how to pick up pieces, how to take another step forward, how to see your view, how to function within Philippians 1:6. It may be bleak, it may be dark, but he's going to finish. See, his finish isn't what we see as a good finish. Lord, show me. I'll believe that. Show me the plan and then help me not to believe what I see. Show me and then help me to be content with the plan. The plan might be right where you are in a storm. Seeing God's view. If I end up on an isle of Patmos alone, the prisoner of the Lord, I don't see victory, but I will believe you're working in me. If I'm in a prison house in Rome, if I'm facing a socialistic government? What are we going to do? He which hath begun a good work in you is not limited by a socialistic government. And frankly, what's the worst thing that could happen? They give you free health care. Huh? When in Rome, do as the Romans do, I guess. I know you don't like that, but city. Look at what I see. and the walls came tumbling down. Yeah, but wait till we read about what happened with Achan. And the walls came tumbling down. But Abraham really made a mess. And we're really suffering from that today. But you know what God started in Abraham, He's going to finish out yonder. But Paul was martyred. Death doesn't stop God completing the plan for your life. I'll take one more verse out of context. If thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. Children, I don't mean physically. But you know what's hindering us from God's view? What we see. The facts are the facts. And faith and fact do not get along. Let's all stand.